This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week we have something that is entirely different from what we normally have, which are conversations with conjurers, and this week we are going to be speaking with someone who is not a magician. However, he is in his own right. He is a magic with a paintbrush. This gentleman is someone who lives in Las Vegas, and in fact, a few weeks ago, we happened to have a podcast featuring Murray Sawchuk, and Michael Goddard, who is our guest this week, actually just lives around the corner, just down the first stoplight and just around the corner, not too far from Murray, so had an opportunity to go over to his home and actually sit down to chat with him, and we went out into his studio, where I say studio, actually it was more of a sound stage where he records some things from time to time with some friends in his area that he's got set apart just for that special occasion. So it was soundproof. So we had pretty good opportunity to sit and chat, and it was the most delightful conversation. Now, the reason I wanted to talk with Michael Goddard is several-fold. First of all, that I really have always enjoyed his art. As all of you know, that I enjoy my martinis, and that he is well-known as the olive artist. He has, if you've seen some of these pictures where there are playful little olives that are dancing in and out of martini glasses, with different backgrounds, and anyhow, fantastic. In fact, he is the number one selling artist in the world today. It is just amazing how successful that he has gotten to be, and during this conversation, we're going to get into all that, of kind of his initial roots and his beginnings, and then how that he had grown to the stature that he is then today. But the reason, again, that not only do I enjoy his artwork, and I just wanted to have an opportunity to meet the person, and but also because he is an artist, and I have a little commonality there, because I started out, when I first went into college, I thought maybe I would be an artist. I always enjoyed drawing and painting. I haven't done that in a long time, but occasionally I will get back and maybe draw a few things here and there. But I also, when I travel, like to go to museums, and I love viewing artwork. And so I appreciate the art that he has given us, and continues to give us, and that it is something that now I think is a good time also for us to post this podcast, because it's shortly before the Christmas holidays, and if you're going to be looking for something that is completely different, then you might want to consider perhaps giving yourself or a loved one a gift of one of his paintings. They're available. You can go online and find them, or he has a gallery in Las Vegas as well as some other places, and he also is out on cruise ships, where that he is also talking with the guests, the passengers on the cruise ship, as well as doing some artwork there and selling that. Anyhow, so there are various ways in which that you can get in touch with him, and I think that you would certainly enjoy his artwork then as well. But again, another reason I wanted to talk with him, because he has the perspective of an artist. Now, magicians are artists, and we are creative in our own right on the performance stage, I should say, whereas that he is creative with the paintbrush, as I mentioned earlier. And so I wanted to talk about, I guess, creativity from a different standpoint. We're always talking on this podcast really with other magicians, and I think that we need to occasionally look outside of our own art to try to see what's happening in the rest of the world and how that it might impact our own artwork that we are trying to create when we are performing then as well. So that probably is the main reason, the main focus that I really wanted to sit down and chat with Michael, or as he had requested that I call him G, since we're friends now. So anyhow, that G is going to talk with us about what it is that is his inspiration, and perhaps he might prove to be an inspiration to you. So this way that you can be more creative in your artwork on stage and in your performances. So please welcome my guest here this week, G, or Mr. Michael Goddard, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for themagicwordpodcast.com. And today we're going in a little bit different direction. Well, let me rephrase that. We're going in a lot different direction in which that in the past, of course, over 500 episodes or so, that we've had people who have been performing as a magician at least at some point in their life, or perhaps at least like when I talked with Robin Leach, that he had an interest in magic and also helped to elevate other magicians and to talk about how that magic had grown in the Las Vegas area. Well, today we're going to be talking about someone who actually does magic in a different way. He does magic on canvas. This gentleman is the best-selling artist in the world for the last 10 years. And one of the reasons that I wanted to talk with him, and you guys will know this, is because I like martinis, and so does he, and I like blue cheese olives, and so does he, and I like magicians, and so does he. So please welcome my friend, Michael Goddard. Hey there, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you, Scott. That's awesome. Yeah, you can just call me G if you'd like. Most people, when they say Michael, Michael Goddard, I always think of getting in trouble as a child, and I expect my middle name to come next.
It's your mom is saying that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
By the way, one of my vices is gambling, which is like an alcoholic living in a bar if you like to gamble and live in Vegas. But I do have some magic there, because what I do, I can make money disappear about as quick as anybody, buddy.
Okay. So that's why on some of your pictures that you'll see this money with wings. Is
yes.
that right?
Oh, yeah. You'll see gambling themes and money with wings, and you know, and being married too, you learn some of that as well.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So we're here in Las Vegas right now, in which that you have a studio here, among other places. But this is your residence,
yes.
But you really aren't here a lot, because you were telling me earlier you travel a whole heck of a lot.
I'm traveling. How I ended up in Vegas actually was that I was living in Southern California with my family, and my grandparents lived up here in Vegas. My grandfather worked at the Nevada test site, and so I was coming up here as a toddler to visit my grandparents. Later on, my dad got ill, and my parents divorced not too long after that. So I was about 5 or 6, and my dad moved up here, so we would visit my dad when I was a kid. And then later on, I went to high school here for a short time and college here for a short time, discovered gambling, got kicked back to California, and then moved up here permanently in 2003. But both here and California feel like home to me.
Yeah, and in California, you're in the L.A. area?
Thereabouts. West Covina, Upland, mm-hmm. Fontucky, or this is a Fontana. And later years, just before moving to Vegas, I was in mainly Orange County, like Huntington Beach, Newport Beach, Laguna, things like that. So.
Did you ever get a chance to go to the Magic Castle?
I did, actually. Okay. I did. And back then, actually, I wasn't even painting. I was a mechanical engineer back in the day. Mm-hmm. And we had a client
that came
in.
Had shorter hair even back then, I guess.
But yeah, I did.
To work
hair never
office.
Touched the collar. And then for 15 years, I had it long. I think it was just out of rebellion and never had a tattoo. Now I'm covered with them. And then recently got my hair cut, and now I look like Kris Jenner. But anyway, so we had a client of ours that came in. I don't remember what he sold the engineering company, but some type of parts or something. He was also a magician on the side, and invited me and my boss to come visit Magic Castle. And I was probably all of about, you know, maybe my mid-20s around then. Mm-hmm. And wow, it just felt like such a privilege, especially for someone who's not a magician. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, I don't know if I'm correct, but you have to be invited by a magician who's, you know, one of their members and, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. So it was a big to-do, and man, I had fun. I've always loved magic.
Yeah, it's a private club, and did you have to be a member or a guest of a member or a performer in order to get in? You can't buy your way in, and it gets pretty full, even of members and their guests every night, because depending upon who's going to be there, and they've got close-up and stage and everything, and so it kind of rocked your world a little bit. You've not seen magic in that way before.
No, I had never seen it. You know, the thing about it, I've never seen close-up magic close-up, if that, I know that sounds redundant, that was something new, and, you know, it's a little bit vague now, because it's been many years. This was back in probably 1990 or something like that. That was a while ago. Mm-hmm. And but I remember going through the different rooms, and in each room, there was a different magician there.
Right.
And all of them had their specialty, and man, I was just, you know, blown away. And you know, as a kid, I like to get the magic, you know, the magic tricks, and I still to this day Anytime I go through any of the casinos, if they have a magic shop, I'm in there. I'm looking for something.
Do you really?
Yeah, I go in there and I'll buy something silly like a two-sided nickel or, you know, something you can do with the dollar bill and, you know, or gag gifts. You know, my friends are real magicians, so I don't dare claim to ever be a magician. So, same thing with music. We're sitting here in my music studio. I play, started playing the drums when I was 12, and up until my 30s or 40s, I stayed pretty active in music. But, the friends I have now are, big rock stars.
Yeah.
I never claimed to be a magician. I mean, I'm a musician around them, so.
I know you don't like the name drop, but you were showing me your mm-hmm. beautiful home, and as you did, you were showing me a lot of your guitar collection. Of course,
sure.
Ozzy Osbourne, I guess, is one of your close friends.
Yeah, and he did the foreword to two of my books, worked with him and his wife, Sharon, on some really neat projects for colon cancer. And, I've got all kinds of crazy guitars. Well, what's funny? Is that to me, a magician is an artist as well. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people that are involved in music also like to draw. A lot of magicians are very talented painters and have artistic affinity for the arts. And cross pollination. I mean, I was doing an art show, and right across me at the Art of Music was Ringo Starr, and he's a painter.
Right.
As well.
So is John Lennon.
So is John Lennon. Yeah. And there's a plethora of them. Mm-hmm. One of the galleries that I do shows at is called Wentworth. And Wentworth also has Paul Stanley and the drummer from, I forget his name right now, the drummer from Def Leppard. And, there's a lot of crossover. And I see that in magic, too. A lot of magicians that I know that are musically inclined or they can sing.
I think it's the creativity side of the brain.
You're right.
When you create, you create everything.
Right.
I started out as an art major, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
I'm going to get to that in just a second, but when we were talking about this being in it, for people, obviously you're not sitting here, we're not doing a video of this, it's hard to explain. It looks like a converted garage,
yes.
But it's more than just a garage, on this estate. And it's more than just that also, because you said Lady Gaga has recorded
here. Yeah, Nine Inch Nails recorded here. So
it's not just a garage.
It's not just a garage. In fact, the soundproofing that was done in here is pretty amazing.
It is.
But I'm getting some of my buddies. I have got my friend Chris Kale from Five Finger Death Punch. He's the bass player for that band. He's going to come over and help me set it up, and then I think I mentioned earlier, not with your listeners, but that I was recently married in October, and mm-hmm. the photographer for our wedding was the lead singer of Asia, a guy named John Payne, and then another friend of mine was our ordained minister. He used to sing for Quiet Riot as the lead singer of Quiet Riot. So I got all these crazy friends. It's a lot of fun. But as you walk through the house, I totally understand, Scott. It's filled with guitars and different trades I've made over the years.
Right.
I'll tell you, I did a painting for a mutual friend, Murray Sawchuk, mm-hmm. Of him as an olive, of course, because that's what I do.
It is really
cool. I
paint
olives.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a trade because he was going to teach me a magic trick that I could, that maybe I could share with some of my fans. So that's cool. I love life.
Yeah, it is really cool. And I also want to give a huge shout out to Murray. That's when I say he's my boy, I mean, he was even at my son's wedding, when we came out to Vegas to get married. And Murray and I have been friends for 30 years, and just a great young man. And competent magician. And when I mentioned about
and very conservative haircut,
and so yeah, that's why you like him.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons.
Thanks, Murray, very much for helping to set this up and introduce me to G here.
Yeah.
So anyhow, I was about to say, as far mm-hmm. as I started out when I was in college as an art major. I loved art, and my thinking was for my creativity side of it, that I wanted to do that, and I started that for the first year in college, and then I was in the class. I could see other people had better, in my opinion, better talent than mm-hmm. I did. But then in later years, I look back, it's like we all had different talent.
Right.
One of the things that I was drawing was more abstract. Particularly, I drew like mazes, mm-hmm. That look like intestines, and then they get smaller and smaller, but they would eventually lead to something. So if you're looking at it, actually, you could follow it as a maze, but it would take you a while, and it would, but it'd be a huge acrylic.
Right.
And I was looking at the things that the other artists were doing in my class, and they were, you know, drawing or painting pictures that were more realistic of, or maybe a little bit more abstract, but, you know, other things. And mine was out of my mind, you know, kind of a thing. And I think back, and I kind of probably could have, you know, pursued that. But I've always loved art. And so then I thought, well, I'm not going to be a good artist, so I'll go into journalism. And then that way I'll be a famous art critic, because there's always, you know, like...
there's plenty of those. Don't be one of those, Scott. Do not be that.
So, because I know what I like, and so then I thought, well, okay, I went into journalism to into advertising, and then with a minor in radio and television, thinking I'll work in the creative department, you know, an ad agency or something, you know. That didn't work out, but I worked for a newspaper, and I was a gourmet food editor for a while, and funny now, because for a long time I also was worked for Magic Magazine, where I talked about magicians who were at conventions, and I was kind of a critic in a way, and I would be a critic of their shows, of what I liked or didn't like, you know. So in a way, I kind of became a critic, but not an art critic of artists so much, but of performing artists, of magicians, you know. But still to this day...
It's crazy, isn't it, how life leads you down all these different roads. And I told my daughter, I have a 25-year-old daughter, and she goes, Dad, I don't know why I'm going through this. I said, you know what? One day you look back and you say, my life could not have been a better written movie or story. Mm-hmm. I mean, we write the stories of our lives. None of it makes sense as we're going through it. Later on, we look back and, you know, I don't remember the hypotenuse of a triangle anymore. And I was an engineer for 13 years. So.
Yeah. Well, I used to play in a band also. I was in a jazz band, played a cornet, you know, and I was in college as well. I still read music, but I haven't played in a long time. But I, you know, I've always appreciated music as well.
Out of all musicians, though, jazz allows you the most freedom. To be creative.
Just like Art, I was saying about the maze, you know, whatever, you know, allowing my mind to create something rather than seeing something and trying to draw what I see, you know, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And going to that, you know, that what is your creative muse? You know, when I look at the olives, how did that come about?
Well, it's kind of funny. My muse basically is life that surrounds us. And people ask me, say, so what type of artist are you? I say, you know, I'm sort of a pop artist, I guess you would say. I'm a photorealist, so I like to paint realism because I'm kind of anal that way.
I see Andy Warhol as being a pop artist, really.
But mine's a little bit different, but I believe that art should take you to someplace photography can't. So I can appreciate painting a wine bottle and a glass of wine next to it and seeing that someone has mastered their craft. But to me, art should take you to someplace new. And I was painting all sorts of things. I was painting cigars for a while, and I was known as the cigar guy. Mm-hmm. I was known as the flower guy for a while. And I had a friend of mine who was a martini drinker. And at the time, I was actually living in my car, so no one knew. But I was standing in front of my car one day, where I lived, and my beautiful home. And my buddy says, hey, listen, my birthday's coming. And I'd love for you to do something for my birthday. He goes, listen, I got to charge you. I mean, you're my friend, but, you know.
I need gas money for my car, for my home.
So he goes, you know what, G? He goes, you're always joking around. You're always, you know, having fun. You know, I'd like it to be something fun. And you know me, I love my martini glass with three olives in it. So I painted a painting, and the olives, I added some arms and legs, and they were partying.
Yeah.
And I was just about done with the paintings, about 2 weeks into it, and my aunt comes over, and she goes, oh, my gosh, Michael, what is this? I said, oh, it's just new painting. She goes, I love it. She goes, you know, I'm your aunt, and you've never painted anything for me, and I'm a wine drinker. So I said, okay, fine.
Here we go.
So my first painting that had grapes in it was three grapes taking a sobriety test. I called it Nervous Grapes, and they're walking, taking this sobriety test. They just escaped a wine bottle, and you know, a cop was there giving them a ticket. And that was, gosh, I want to say that was 20 years ago, and I can't believe I'm still doing it. Most of the time I'll meet someone, and they'll assume I'm a musician because of the way I dress or the tattoos or, you know, whatever. And, you know, I tell them, no, I'm a painter. No, well, what do you paint? And I say, well, you know, I paint olives and martinis and things with alcohol. They go, are you the olive guy? And I go, yeah, I'm the olive guy. They go, oh my gosh.
So they recognize you then as the olive guy.
Yeah, but most people, I'd say, have seen my art somewhere, but not everyone has seen my face, so they don't necessarily know what I look like. And not that it's a good thing or a bad thing, but had I known, you know, what it was going to be. If someone had asked me, basically, Scott, you know, what do you think? If you imagine yourself as an artist, what will you be doing? If I would have told somebody that I paint olives for a living, I think they would have thought, okay, and are you off your meds or not? But when I try and describe my art, I'm a storyteller. And, you know, if you go back 200 years ago and looked at the paintings that were around then, you could see how people dressed and what they were interested in and what type of dogs they had and the type of furniture that was in their house. And basically what I do is I take the stories that happened in my life and I turn everybody into olives or grapes or strawberries. Wow. and it's all alcohol related, and it's been nice for me because, you know, when I was painting cigars, my audience is very small, just cigar smokers. Mm-hmm. And maybe one out of every 10 cigar smokers actually buys art. Well, with the martini thing, you know, martini is nostalgic. It's I have my 70-year-old, you know, retired, you know, lawyers or doctors that collect my work. And then I've got the 5-year-old kids who love it because, you know, to them, the olives are kind of like a little cartoon. So kids will come to my art shows and, yeah, you know, and they'll bring their own. It'll be some little girl and she'll draw a strawberry ballerina or something. So it's a lot of fun. And now I've been doing it ever since. It's kind of wild, man.
It is a wild ride. And I would think that some people would look at you or your art and say, uh-huh, I wonder if that guy had an alcohol problem. Maybe this is his way of kind of working through the therapy.
Now
or
that you bring it up. So I have been, I was sober. I'm 56 years old now. And when I turned 52, it's 2 years after I got my AARP card. What did it? But I never touched alcohol. So every interview I ever did, people would sort of like make fun of me. Go, hey, that's the guy who paints alcohol that doesn't drink. I just never had a taste for it. Well, about 4 or 5 years ago, I picked up some vodka. I didn't care for the taste of it, so I would just down it. And then 4 years later, I found myself fighting for my life. And in January, we had an intervention, and my wife had one, saved my life, got me out of, got me away from the booze. And I was, you know, I don't know, 6 months away from death is what I was told. I was already hallucinating. It got really bad. So I still paint alcohol. I just don't drink it. Okay. But I enjoy it. And lately, I've been doing something new with coffee beans, so I might be known as the coffee bean guy next.
Bean guy. So yeah, the beans kind of are animated also, whimsical like
yes,
that?
Yes, yeah, they're whimsical. They're painted realistically, but sometimes they'll have faces and they'll be doing things. Okay. And so many of us really enjoy a good cup of coffee and need it to survive. So
yeah, I understand. I'm that way in the morning. Most of us are. Not to dwell too long on this, mm-hmm, but during that dark time, were mm-hmm you still painting and doing the olives and everything? Or
the first 30 days, I was in detox, hardcore. And so I was not painting at all. Okay. And, you know, because before that, I was drinking 24 hours a day.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, over a gallon of vodka a day. I mean, literally, it was killing me quick. And it just got totally out of control, and where alcohol was my life. There was no such thing as painting, you know, too much. And but I will tell you that the second month, I did a part-time recovery, and you know, man, my mind got really clear, and I have a whole new vision, mm-hmm, on life. As happens with anyone, if they go through something really dramatic, life-changing, you know, I spun around and, you know, I don't want to say I'm glad I became an alcoholic, but I'm so much happier a person now than I would have been had I not struggled with alcohol, because it's helped my marriage. It's helped me in relationships. I'm continued to get counseling, not just for me. There was two things I wanted, Scott, when I went to rehab. One was I needed to get sober. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is, I wanted to know why I picked up a drink in the first place. And I'd always thought, you know, any of my addictions or things that I'd struggled with over the years was just simply, oh, you know, it's just part of being artistic and, you know, or, you know, musicians write their best songs when they're sad and, you know, people are, you know, are creative when they have to dig deep. Well, a lot of that's true and a lot of it's BS, man. So, mm-hmm, but I can tell you now, I have so many new ideas and new directions I want to go that's really been life-changing. And again, you know, my muse is life that goes on around me. So I will tell you, Scott, I do come with a disclaimer. Be careful what you tell me today, because you could end up as an olive in one of my paintings. Put your microphone in your headset.
The reason I was wanting to ask, because uh-huh, that some people that you just hit on feel as if that when they're drinking that they're more creative. One of the fellows that people listen to and know on this podcast was Simon Lovell, and he had a serious drinking problem, and he moved back then to England to continue to dry out. But when he did get his coin, and he was dry. He didn't feel that he was quite as creative as he had been whenever he was drinking. And so he got back and started drinking again, and he was, you know, funny and everything. But, you know,
yeah. I call BS.
I don't know that I buy that.
I call BS myself, and this is just my opinion. And everyone has their own struggles and their own journey and sure. their own opinions. But, you know, when I was a kid back in the 80s going to school, you know, hey, man, smoking weed made you more creative. But let me tell you something. I had lots of ideas, but it's rare that I ever picked up a pencil when I was high. You know,
it just made
me lazy. Well, like and said, alcohol, too. You know, you might feel, you know, because you have less inhibited and, you know, you have no inhibitions. And so you're, you know, I don't know. You just feel like you can do anything. You feel like you're funnier.
Yeah.
And it's difficult. You know, I speak a lot in public now, too, on the cruise ships that I sell. I sell 300 cruise ships. And, you know, I'm speaking in front of about 200 or 300 people. And, you know, I always had a little drink, you know, before I would go, you know, talk to everyone. I felt like it was a little bit more fun. All it was I was just a little bit more relaxed.
Yeah.
But now I'm learning to face those demons and sort of embrace them and use that energy in a positive, you know, in a positive way that's healthy for me,
I should say.
You
that's
know,
right.
But, you know, everyone's got their own opinions about everything. So, you know.
That's true. Well, let's move away from that. But talking about cruise ships, you know, it's kind of funny because as I was coming here, I told you a story out front that whenever I was in spin class, that my spin instructor, Nancy Maffei, was...
trying to imagine you spinning right now. That might be the olive spinner. Watch out, guys.
Olive spinner. And you remember the Spinners, the group the Spinners?
Yes.
I saw those guys in concert with my son, Sean, and he was saying, I see what they call the Spinners because a lot of these times they were dancing. They just were spinning around on the stage.
Well, that was part of the entertainment. They didn't just sing. I mean, they danced.
Sure.
And, you know,
yeah.
In fact, most of the...
like the Pips and everybody.
Yeah, the Pips and the Temptations and all those bands, you know, it was more... And even the actors, you know, 30, 40 years ago, they weren't just acting. They were you know, tap dancers and singers.
You had to put on a show. You know, I think you're right, because people come to see that. Otherwise, you can just listen to the album, you know, well, I guess, however, listen now. But we used to put on the album or the 45 or whatever. I remember hearing a band that came to my college. I'm trying to think.
You're in college. It's okay.
That's right. Well, it was in the 60s and 70s. So what happened was that they just sang one song after the other and basically didn't say, you know, hey, we're glad to be here or, you know, here's something I've been working on or whatever. And I felt like I could just as easily have gone back just and listened to the album. You know,
it's funny, Scott, because I sort of see my art the same way in that... Let's say a magician or a musician, you're walking down the street of Chicago and there's a guy, he's got a little tip bucket out there or whatever. Mm. And some guy's just, you know, playing his music or, you know, he's there doing some tricks for people up close. And, you know, they're showing off their talent, but it's one thing. It's also a form, I guess, of entertainment. As well. I mean, not in a way that most people think it is, but it's a way that we make friends with, you know, I mean, man, if I knew magic, seriously, I envy you magicians, because if I knew magic, I could go up to a total stranger or some kid who looks bored with their parents and say, hey, let me show you something. I mean, there was a magic trick I ever saw that I remember was at my babysitter's house. And the babysitter's... The husband would take a coin. He told me, he had this whole story about how his arm had a soft spot and he could take any coin, he'd drop it right into his forearm. Mm-hmm. And I would watch him do it about once a week. You know, it wasn't until many, many years later that I realized he didn't have a soft spot filled with a bunch of coins, you know. But I'll tell you, man, it's such a distraction. The kids especially, they're so fascinated.
Oh, sure.
And we're just all grown-up kids. So
yeah.
I love it.
It is. It's a lot of fun. I was going to say, so going back to the spin class, so I was saying that I'm going to be coming out to Las Vegas, and I was, said, hey, I'm going to be having an opportunity to talk to Michael Goddard while I'm there. And she said, oh, my gosh, she said, I just got off a cruise ship, and they were selling his paintings on there, and I know exactly who it is. You know, a couple other people said, who? I said, well, you know, the olive guy, you know, just like you said. Oh, yeah. You know, people were saying, I knew who you talk about then now.
Right.
I mean, yeah, you know, the hottest selling rock star of art, you know, that you are, you know, in the world today. The world, that's amazing. You know, which is amazing, too. I've got listeners again, all the world over here that probably are, I know for sure, are aware of your artwork then as well, which is why I think this is interesting. So I just think it's interesting that you said you've been doing the cruise ships for like 15 years.
I did 15 years with Princess Cruise Lines. Right now, I sell through a company called Park West. Park West puts my art 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on over 300 cruise ships. Wow. And I'll tell you something too. I've made a lot of friends that are magicians. And, you know, how many of us that are not in the military would be able to travel like that or like I do now had it not been for the cruise ship gigs and stuff? I mean, they've been great to me. And I've met the only the funny thing, I seem to always get in this conversation with magicians when I'm on a boat. Hmm. And they'll say to me, they'll go, Goddard, people come up and you know, talk to you when you're just trying to relax and eat. And I go, all the time.
All the time.
I go, here's what I get. What I get is someone who comes up and they'll say, listen, you know, my aunt's cousin's brother's sister used to draw. Would you like to see some of their artwork? Here's their Instagram. I mean, it drives me nuts, right? It's constant.
Yeah.
So the magicians always say the same thing. What they do is they, you know, they've seen the show. They're on the cruise ship. Now they see him at lunch, like, oh, celebrity, right?
Right.
So they come up to him. They'll say, hey, can I show you a magic trick? It's like everybody in the world wants to show you their magic trick.
Do.
You know.
Whenever I'm doing walk around or strolling or I'm working in a restaurant doing something, that I see that frequently, which that, oh, you know, I like magic. All right, you know, let me show you my trick. I'm thinking, hey, I'm paid by the hour. That's quite all right. You know, yeah. I'll let you show me whatever you want.
I thought of something really funny the other day. And that is what's unique about us and our careers. Uh-huh. So say, for example, you're a musician. And a musician, people go there to enjoy the music.
Exactly.
They, with our careers, well, when they go to see a magician, they want to see if they can catch him. They want to see if they could figure the trick out. They mm-hmm. almost want to see him fail in some way where maybe they see the sleight of hand.
Right.
With me, I got to tell you, Scott, it's the worst because people, you know, want to see me dead because my artwork's worth a lot more.
So when they say sign guys. It, they want you to date it too.
Yeah, they want me to date it. Well, you know, they'll be like, you
tomorrow.
Know, yeah, they'll be like, you know, Goddard, I bought 6 of your paintings this weekend. It's been nice knowing you. So I try and spread the news, and that's for everybody listening, by the way, that the art is worth more with the artist alive. Okay, I mean, I want to go peacefully in my sleep. Just like my grandfather, you know, not like the other four pastors going, oh, my God, somebody wake grandpa up. I mean, I want to, you know, like enjoy it. But it's funny. And I'll you know, there's some people that, you know, take fun things like what we do way too serious. And, you know, people will be trying to tell me about, you know, the art of illumination and the French, you know, and the masters, the way they did the Urne paintings and all that. I go, you know what? It's just fun. Just supposed to make you happy. It's entertaining. And, you know, you just have fun with it. And I love what I do because it's a great way to meet new people. It's a great way to make friends. And people love it, you know, from young to old. And I feel like a big kid. My mom tells me, listen, Michael, if the art ever slows down, you can always go into roofing. Like, hell no.
That's hail no.
Roofing? Hail yeah, no, yeah. But it's a lot of fun. I love the whole cruise ship thing. It's taking me all over the place. And
you say you kind of come in like as a surprise guest. I mean, tell me exactly how that works as far
as... Well, what happens is if you buy some art on a cruise ship, depending on how much you spend is depending on where they're going to send you for free so they can get you to come back and buy more art.
Yeah.
So, you know, say you spend $1,000 or $2,000, they might put you up in the Ritz-Carlton someplace nice, or they might put you on a beginner's cruise. Maybe they send you to Mexico for 3 days. They pay for everything. And then while you're there, once that happens, you become part of their VIP program, which means that during a VIP event, it might last a weekend or sometimes several days, they'll bring 5 guest artists in. No one knows who they're going to be, and they come in, and that's kind of what I do. So with different levels of spending, so, you know, say if you're dropping, you know, $20,000 or $30,000 or $50,000, $100,000, $1,000,000, whatever you're dropping for art is the level that they'll take care of you. So, you know, they might take care of you and your wife and your family for a cruise around Europe for several weeks. And so at that point, I come in and people actually get to meet me that have seen my art and have mm-hmm. bought my stuff before. So I'm constantly traveling. About 3 weekends out of the month, I'm on the road and...
You said you're going to London next week?
I'm going to London next week. Been all over the place. You know, you're talking about Israel. I did a show in Israel a few years back. We've been to India. There's very few countries I...
What's your favorite?
It's definitely not North Korea. Where every drink is the same size. Supreme leader. No.
That's your next career as a stand-up.
God,
comic.
Yeah. You know what? I really enjoy... Well, you know, I really enjoy here at the States. It's just going up to Boston, New York. I really mm-hmm. enjoy that.
I like to say
but out of the country, I enjoy Canada a lot. I have a lot of Canadian friends. It's just beautiful. If I had to live in another country outside of the U.S., that's where I'd live. But I love Venice. Venice was a magical place. You know, here in Vegas, you're required to take state history, as you are most anywhere here in the U.S.
Yeah, Texas.
And, you know, Vegas only goes back like 50, 60 years. So you learn about Bugsy Siegel.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
When you go to Europe, I mean, you're, you know, or Venice, and you're seeing things that are hundreds of years old, or like Egypt, thousands and thousands of years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty amazing. I feel really privileged that I'd even get to do that. So, but I love it. I love it. And it's a great way to see the world. And I'm working hard because you never know when it's going to end.
Well, that's right. Make hay while the sun shines, you know, basically.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
One of the things also that one of the reasons I want to talk with you is because of your association or that you had worked with and seen some other magicians as well. And you'd also worked with Chris Angel on one of his Mind Freak shows as well.
Yeah. I met Chris when he first came to town. Before he was just doing street magic at the had just moved from New York out here, and met him through another still a great friend, Danny Coker, who has a show on History Channel called County Cars. They call him the Count.
Okay.
And he was at the Aladdin just before he got the gig there, and we had met, hit it off, became, you know, best buddies, done a lot of artwork for him as well, but still talked to him. In fact, as of 2 months ago, before I moved into this house here in Summerlin, we were actually neighbors, only about a mile away. But you know, Vegas is a small town, and you know, you meet a lot of different people. And if you know, when I'm here doing, say, a red carpet event, you know, I'll see Murray, or I'll see, you know, Carrot Top, and you know, the same kind of you know, same circle. Yeah, it's pretty cool, and it's neat, you know, because you get to go to a lot of the openings and things like that. But I've always loved it. In fact, one of the things I did, because before I would come in, you know, sometimes there'd be a lot of people waiting, you know, in line or whatever to see us. So I'd kind of want to get everybody sort of warmed up, or you know, sometimes there's a 2-3 hour wait to come and take a picture with me, you know, and the lines in the galleries. So I would have, you know, different types of entertainment, whatever I could think of, something beyond just music. And I thought, man, I love magic so much. So I hired a kid named Jason Scott, who was a mentalist and used to do some crazy things where he put a string in his eyeball and come out another orifice. It was bizarre, man. I couldn't even watch it, but I loved it. You know, it's like where it's like watching a scary movie, right? Where you peek through just a couple of your fingers to see what's happening. And so what he did was this is back in 2006, and it was my Magic and Mayhem tour, and Martini's Magic and Mayhem tour. So the Mayhem I can't share with you on the radio, but the Martini's was fun.
You had a painting of that named that too.
Yes, yeah, I did. And so Jason went around with me, and he would be there at the art shows, just kind of keeping people just loving. He would do close up magic. He'd do all kinds of cool stuff, and people just had such a good time. And so you know, it didn't seem like it was you know, like they were waiting in line at the DMV. I mean, they really enjoyed it. Unfortunately, he was coming back from, I think it was Georgia, and had a stomach ache, and they never did figure out what it was, but he passed away, and he was in his early 30s. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. So sad, because he was so talented. And again, you know, another reason why we should appreciate every breath we take. But you know, he had quite an impact. And you know, talking with his family, you know, Jason, every magician and artist, I think, loves to share their craft with other people and put a smile on people's faces. He certainly did that. And his family, I talked to him later on, said, you know, Goddard, like, those are some of the best years of his life. He really, really loved traveling with you and doing that. And so, yeah, that was, you know, cool. And super cool guy. Gosh, I think when I've been over to like Chris Angel's house or hanging out with Murray or whatever, a lot of those magicians, they hang out with other magicians.
That's right.
So I've got to meet a lot of neat people, a lot of neat magicians that, you know, that I only knew as young people on a billboard. By the way, they don't change those in Vegas. Like, you know, Lance Burton or some of those people.
Still there.
Still there. David Copperfield. Uh-huh. They have a picture of them like when they were 20. You know what I mean?
And I know exactly what you're
saying. You know, I'm just calling a spade, not calling anybody out. But yeah, that was a good time. And again, you know, you'd mentioned Robin Leach earlier when we were talking in the backyard. And you know, Robin knew everybody. So it's great because Murray's introduced me to a lot of people too. But
did you ever meet, we've talked about Siegfried and Roy. You've been to Siegfried's house back there because you've got a backyard. You look kind of like theirs as far as the rock pool and everything then too. But you saw their show way back when?
I saw their show, and I got to tell you, I was a little bit disappointed, but not for reasons that you might imagine. You know, they'd already been doing the show for maybe 30 years. Mm-hmm. It was a long time. And when I saw them, you know, they're just kind of going through the motions. They had done the show so many times, it was like there was no
freshness about it.
There was no freshness about it at all. And I think, you know, as a magician, as an artist, you know, you're constantly trying to reinvent yourself and push your limits. And if you're not hungry, you know, I mean, what do? You kind of just blow away with the wind. And
nail it in, cash a check.
It's great. You know, I was really curious, you know, talk with Chris not too long ago. And his contract with the Luxor was ending. It was at 10 years.
Yeah, he had a
and
deal.
Was awesome. Mm-hmm. It was an awesome deal. Did great. And I'm thinking, you know, I wonder if he's going to retire. You know, most people love what they do so much mm-hmm. that they can't see themselves doing anything else.
I was surprised that Lance retired.
Right? Oh, me too. I can't believe it. And but Chris decided, you know, to work again. And, you know, I've seen Murray perform lots of different places. And, you know, life's always changing and you got to keep it fresh mm-hmm. and, you know, and stay hungry, you know. Not to preach or anything, but musicians, you know, a lot of times kind of lose that desire. I was talking with Ozzy's son, and Jack said, I said, what was it that you think is the reason that your dad, who went off his own when he was, you know, kicked out or left Black Sabbath, how did he make it? So many of them don't, you know, that go single. He says, well, because most, you know, singers or whatever, when they leave the band, they've already got, you know, the fancy cars, they've already got the mansion, they're not hungry anymore. And for me too, I mean, you know, after being on a cruise ship for 15 years, I knew I could just sign my name on a painting and it would sell.
Yeah.
And coming to Park West with 600 other artists there, it was felt like kind of like, well, I want to show the other artists what we can do. Sometimes I imagine, you know, that that, you know, we just kind of rest on our laurels and think, oh, you know, it's always going to be good or whatever. Or we just lose that hunger that we had. I mean, when you're a young magician, you want to, like, conquer the world. Mm-hmm. After you've been doing it for 20, 30 years, do you still enjoy it as much as you used to? And if so, you know, what are you doing that's new? How have you pushed yourself into a new direction? What's changing? You know, I mean, now I would imagine that there's more magic tricks using cell phones and things that are more modern, right?
Right.
So, you know, but it's neat to watch. I think you got to kind of, you know, change your sails because the wind is always changing directions.
That's true. Yeah, it seems to me that you're you do have to keep fresh and you have to keep that interest level, certainly. And it's interesting about the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, where you reach that pinnacle of self-esteem, and mm-hmm. what is it that's, you know, giving you that self-esteem, and what is it that is giving you joy in your life? Mm-hmm. In other words, once you got however many cars and whatever that you want to travel, you know, so money's no longer an object, then it becomes perhaps power. You know, it's like notoriety. Well, I want to, well, you know, like in maybe Copperfield's case, it's like he was so close to being a billionaire, might as well keep going, you know, because now he's got the B instead of an M in front of that, you know, so if a millionaire, he's a billionaire, then now it's like, okay, what drives him? Although he still is creating new stuff and working on new material and everything too.
Right.
And he's in his early 60s and he's going to continue to drive. So, you know, what is it that drives people like that? You have to have some sort of a desire to want to have to be the best, but you know, he's already been acclaimed as being the best.
Well, and you know, a lot of people, I mean, I'll tell you, most every, you know, musician that I know of that is on the level of being able to fill stadiums, huge, huge rock stars.
Mm-hmm.
So many of them are very, very, they have insecurity problems.
Really?
You know, yeah, it's surprising. And, you know, and even with myself, you know, I still get a little bit nervous before every single art show, and I've done thousands of them. But, you know, that little nervousness kind of keeps me on point.
There you go.
You know, and I sort of have taken that fear, and I mean, it needs to be there because I don't want to make a mistake. And also, you know,
I'm
a perfectionist, keeps you sharp. You want to be confident. You don't want to be overconfident. You don't want to come across like a jerk, you know.
Exactly.
Then no one wants to meet their favorite movie star, and they meet him, and they're so arrogant, you know.
Right.
But, you know, so you need to have a little bit of an ego, but not too much. And you need to be confident, but not too much. And you need to have, you know, all these sort of, you know, ingredients that sort of drive you. You need to be ambitious, but not overly ambitious. Because you know what? in my own career, I'd talk to young artists, oh, you know, I want to do what you did. And, you know, and I tell them, I go, you know what I missed is I missed during what I would consider my true heyday when, you know, it was 3-4 hour wait just to say hello to me, mm-hmm. you know, and I was so busy working so hard. All I could think about was how much I hated being so busy and mm-hmm. I couldn't go anywhere without, you know, being recognized. I wanted a break from all that. And mainly it was because I was doing a lot of television at the time too, mm-hmm. you know, and guests on different TV shows. And now I look back and I want to embrace it. So sure. Everything I do now, I'm taking it in. That journey that you're making, if you're someone, you know, who's just now practicing, say you're in high school, practicing your magic, man, you ever make it to the level of David Copperfield or whatever, you know, you got to enjoy that journey. Man, that sometimes is more fun, you mm-hmm. know. It's about the crappy places. It's about the tricks you did wrong. It's right. about the blunders and, you know, that really stand out. And
good advice. And to maintain that balance also. I'd heard before where Johnny Carson would be behind the curtain and he would still have butterflies before he walked out and told us, like, and here's Johnny. And then he'd walk out and you say your first joke and then you know, you own the audience and you're comfortable.
Yeah.
And as a magician, I'm the same way. I don't care how many shows that I've done.
Right.
When you still walk out in front of somebody, it's not until you start applauding, you know, and you hear the music.
Right.
And then you say the first joke and they laugh. It's like, okay, I've broken that fourth wall. Yeah. They like me.
That nervousness, I think, is good because it keeps mm-hmm. you sharp.
Sharp, exactly.
You know, if someone gets a break and say they have an opportunity to, you know, do something like this, you know, a podcast or, you know, maybe a television program or commercial or whatever it is, you know, those are some magical moments. And you need to be sharp. You need to have your game plan together. But at the same time, you need to be present. You know what I mean?
In the moment
and really soaking it in. And I'll tell you, one of the things that I think is most difficult is a lot of the musician friends that I have that were once big rock stars and now not so big, you know, or someone who does.
How do they deal with that?
It's really strange. I mean, it's almost as if, you know, it's harder to have something and have it taken away than if you never had it at all. With me, you know, I've been, you know, Prince and Pauper many times, you know, just at the top and then, you know, completely, you know, financial ruin and bankruptcy and then building it back up again. And man, I tell you, it's a crazy wild ride. I guess that's what lets you know you're alive.
Don't you feel sometimes, NG, that you are, it's just surreal. I mean, when you stop and try to live in that moment, you're thinking, they're here for me. This is just, you know, amazing, yeah. You know,
we
surreal.
We took a little vacation about 2 months ago up in a place called Cambria, which is, we're on our way to the Redwood Forest and went through Cambria. And, you know, I kept getting recognized there, and, you know, not by a ton of people, but, you know, it's like people who buy art, you know, if they've heard of art, if they're in that.
I mean, knew you weren't the lead singer for Poison.
That's what I used to get. What band are you playing? I'm a painter. Commercial or residential? No. You know? But no, we were up there, and my wife said to me, she goes, you know what, so do you ever stop and think about, you know, what the fame is like and any of that other stuff? I go, you know what, not really. I go, you know what's super cool to me, though, is when I walk into an art gallery and I look and see how I've influenced other artists.
Oh.
And I could see, like, my mark I've made on the world.
Uh-huh.
That is much cooler because, you know, it's like, okay, magician, you have tricks that you consider very easy and some that took thousands of hours, I would imagine. I'm not a magician, but things that take you thousands of hours. And when you, it is such a compliment to talk to another magician who knows what it took for you to handle cards that way or whatever, and getting a compliment from someone like that because they're in your field, you go, wow, that was really cool. Not because you could fool most people,
right?
But you know, when you talk to another magician, this, if they're impressed, then it's a little bit more impressive to you.
You get into an interesting area there. I was just thinking about whenever that you see people that you feel that people are complimenting you, whenever that you see art similar to yours. But I'm sure you see something in which that obviously you didn't paint this.
Oh, yeah.
Just like magicians, many of us that see our tricks ripped off or lines that have taken years to develop, and someone says, "Oh, that's a funny one. I'll use that in my act now." You know, that you've been using for a long time, and they're stealing your babies, you know, basically, and taking money out of your mouth.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with that?
You know, I read something interesting lately, and I was watching a comedian, and the comedians were were saying the same thing. They're going, you know, people steal our jokes all the time, yeah. this and that. And I saw this guy, he says, listen, if you want new material that no one else is ever going to touch, make it your life. Mm-hmm. You're the only you. And if you make your art or your magic or your music about you, you have a huge resource of, you know, of creativity and things that are unique to your, you know, your experience. And, you know, we have to learn the basics. I mean, I had to learn how to, you know, mix colors and stuff like mm-hmm. that. But where you take it as an artist is a completely new arena. I always feel like this. This is what I tell other artists, is that, you know, it's somewhat complimentary, you know, when someone, you know, copies something from you. I like it when people tell me, oh, you know, I did this painting, you inspired me to paint again, and do you mind if I paint something similar to yours just to see if I can do it, yeah. kind of thing. It's different if they're like trying to come out with limited edition prints of their stuff and it's like, hey man, true. That's fine. Yeah, you know, you yeah. see people be making money off your things, or, you know, maybe other, I'm sure this happens because I don't care what industry you're in. There's a lot of shady people out there, mm-hmm. and there's people who, probably magicians out there, who do nothing else, but they figure, oh, I'm going to go to another country, I'm going to watch, you know, Stone perform, right. or whatever, right. and then they take something from their show and they bring it back as if they did it. It's been happening in the art world for a long time too, you know. Before Thomas Kincaid, there was an artist named Marty Bell, painted cottages and was very, very very good at what they did, and Thomas Kincaid had better marketing and kind of took the idea. And, you know, I mean, listen, I can't copyright the martini glass, you know.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's
so
true.
But my take on it, I can. And if you could find a way to embrace what you love to do and mix it in with something that is uniquely yours, that is related to you, you know, then it's a lot more fun.
Yeah.
So, but I've sent a few people to jail. We'll put it that way.
Have you really? Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, you are in a financial position to be able to do that, and that's part of the problem with magicians.
Well, yes and no, Scott, because there's a lot of people out there. I've usually get sued once or twice a year, and sometimes, you know, as much as it bothers me, it's not worth it to chase down some company in China or to spend $500,000 fighting a lawsuit that basically I can make go away for less than that.
Yeah,
you know, and it's unfortunate, and it's like someone stealing the radio out of your car. You feel betrayed. You feel, you know, just
violated. Yeah,
you feel violated, and at the same time, you know, you got to be able to enjoy your life. And two magicians, two artists, two musicians come up at the same time. You know, there's really lots of room for everyone, so you can't get jealous. But, you know, I tell you, a lot of it, man, it has to do with sweat. You know, putting 10,000 hours
right.
in.
Well, in talking about some of the things being stolen, for an example, I know Walter Zany Blaney has had his ladder levitation ripped off and from other countries. And some people see this and they think, okay, well, I think I can figure out what the illusion is, and they can kind of get the measurements and, you know, build it. And it's going to be crappy. You know, it's not going to be as it won't work as well. And what he was always concerned about was, well, what if somebody falls off or they do get injured from this levitation? And then they're going to come back, you know, and say, well, it was me. Well, it was not my plan. So, you know, he wasn't selling it. But somebody in China or Africa or somebody places.
That's why God invented attorneys.
I wonder
to protect
why.
Us and to abuse us at the same time. But yeah, no, it's absolutely true. And, you know, you got to have thick skin. And again, mm-hmm. you know, I encourage everybody to be creative and to tap into their own. What made you love what you do, and mm-hmm. what separates you from everyone else? You have to find your own voice. And when you do, by the time everyone's, you know, starting to mimic what you do, because it doesn't matter what it is, a TV show pops on, if it's a hit show, man, there's 10 more like it just behind it. You've got to be the leader. People can copy my paintings. It's so much easier to look at a painting and dissect it and do exactly the same thing right next to it, but let them try and come up with that trick. Mm-hmm. Let them try and come up with that painting in the first place. That's where we always stay ahead. Or at least I try and stay ahead, for sure.
That's a good idea also, to remember what it was that sparked your interest and gave you joy when you got into that to begin with, and try to keep that spark alive. You've kindled it into a fire in a profession that has been successful, but you need, in order to maintain the success for the long run, what I hear you saying, is to remember that spark.
Right.
So that's
kind of... And it's remember that spark and embrace that spark, And also, you know, if you have it in the back of your mind that you have a goal, whatever it might be, for me sometimes it's to have an epiphany or another idea. I have blank canvases that literally follow me around the house or at my art studio.
Just like an author would, you know, a blank page. What am I going to have for my next novel?
You know? And you know, it's funny. It will come. I mean, if you believe it's going to come, and it, you know, sometimes it does. It might not happen overnight. People say, oh, you know, you're like an overnight success. I go, yeah, 40 years later, man, you know, 50 years later, I'm an overnight success.
40-year overnight success.
But I think that, you know, you've got to believe it. And listen, at the end of the day, even if you really, really love it, sometimes it's a job, man. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you got a gig to show up to that you don't feel like doing and need the money, but that's what separates you from everyone else. Mike Tyson said, you know, that he wanted to be world champion, the best, greatest boxer ever, go down in history as a great boxer, and he wanted that title, the heavyweight champion of the world. Mm-hmm. And he said, I know all the other boxers are popping up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go running. He goes, you know what I do? I get up at 3. I get up 2 hours earlier than they do. And I thought to myself, you know, when I was, you know, trying to feed myself, and if I didn't sell a painting, man, I didn't know if I was going to eat that week. And I had a family to take care of. And, you know, I just, you know, sometimes it's a grind. Sometimes you deal with people that aren't honest with you, or you get people that are, you know, that just hate magicians or hate art, or there's all kinds of people out there. You got to have thick skin and do it because you love it. Mm-hmm. And then you got to love it enough to work really hard at it. And, you know, out of the 200 or so artists when I first started to paint for a living after quitting an engineering job, which was really dumb. But it's worked out now, actually. Never mind.
At the time,
I'm like, you know, wow, it's this
regular
is tough.
Paycheck. Why?
Any hour that they would give me. I worked for a restaurant where if I painted in front of the public, they would actually give me like a free food at this restaurant.
Yeah.
So I made money if I sold something, but it was a way to keep fed. And I worked there, you know, 10, 12, sometimes 16 hours a day. And, you know, out of those 200 artists there, I'm the only one I know of that's making a good living off of it, you know, and it's not because I'm better. It's because I worked twice as hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, the reason that some of my stuff seems so easy, I mean, I have a kid. He's worked for me since, off and on, since he was 18 years old. He's 38 now. And I showed him one day, you know, he was an airbrush artist. So I showed him, this is how you make a straight line every time, right? Showed him, oh, got it, easy. Man, it took him months and months and months to be able to do it. And he goes, it looks so easy when you did. I go, I got thousands of hours behind this, you know?
Right.
So, and I can't even imagine being a magician, the hours that you have to put in, the dedication you have to have, the times you're alone and you're just hour after hour. This is how these musicians make it too. They're in their garage playing
music.
That's
true. You know, the art of magic, in my opinion, is how that you would hide something from people seeing it. And if they see it, it's not art. In other words, it's like a blemish on a canvas.
Sure.
You know, and if you do that, you may as well throw away the canvas, you know. Or, you know, like with photography, I'm sure, you know, when the photographers are, you know, seeing something, well, the composition's not quite right, you know, and digitally you can, you know, delete that, whatever. But it takes a lot of time to have that right eye and everything.
Sure.
And the same thing like with your sleight of hand, or even with larger illusions or whatever you're going to be doing with magic, that it does take a lot of time in order to perfect that, so that every little nuance and every little thing is going to be perfect, so that they cannot backtrack and know whatever had happened. You know, that Henning Nelms had said, attention to detail is the essence of showmanship.
Sure.
And so there are the little things that build up so they can't backtrack. If you're looking at a pond and it's still, and suddenly there's a ripple out there, you don't know what it was, but something happened. You know, it could have been someone threw a rock maybe from somewhere else. It could be a fish, whatever it happened to be. But, you know, you don't know what. And same thing if there's something in which that you're performing and you're going along slowly and then, you know, you do a fast move, they're going to say, oh, he did something. I don't know what it was, but he did something there, you know. And so that dispels the illusion, no longer is a mystery.
Right.
And so that, I'm saying, that's what makes it art, is when it's just beautiful still pond.
Sure.
And they don't see that, which is why I think magicians appreciate other magicians about that stillness, if you will, that they can kind of see that this is a beautiful thing, and I don't know how. Right. I know what he did, but I never saw him do it.
Sure.
It was done well.
You know, we listen to music without thinking, too. And if you take a person who learns how to play the drums from not knowing anything about it at all, after 2-3 years, they tell their friends, hey, man, I'm a drummer. And they do. But, you know, a beginning drummer will show every lick they know, everything they have. And the guys that you consider true pros mm-hmm. are the guys that do it smoothly, that do it effortlessly, and that pick and choose what they decide to do. It's right. It's the fine hand movements. And these poker players that are at the top of their game right now, they remind me of magicians a lot because they are in complete control of all their body movements, all their facial expressions, yeah. All that stuff. And you got to understand that everybody else at that poker table is watching everything you do, waiting for you to give the secret away, mm-hmm. just like a magician. I mean, not that they're waiting for you to fail, but they're really trying hard to figure it out. There's not a person who goes to see a magic show that's not sitting in your audience going, I mean, I do it. Yeah. Every show that I've seen, of Murray's, man, I'm looking at, how the hell did he do that? And I'm looking, man. I'm watching for any strange movement, just like you said. Uh-huh. And I'm a layman. I don't know anything about it. I do enjoy it. But, man, I'll tell you, that's true. You look for just a difference in the movement or whatever. Mm-hmm. Art, same thing. If they see you attempting something, what I do, let's say I have to do lettering in a painting. I know I can do it with a computer later on or whatever, but hand painting everything. And what happens is, I tell other artists, if you're going to put some lettering into a painting, don't try and make it neat like a typewriter. Because if you attempt it and you don't pull it off, you'll get criticized. If you purposely have fun with that mistake or whatever it is, say a magician doing something where maybe the trick is supposed to go wrong, because that's the pun.
Kind of a thing,
magician in trouble, yeah. If I am doing some lettering on a painting and I leave it very loose, say it's something about a teacher, and I'll turn the R and I'll actually put it backwards, but I won't try and make it like a typewriter because there's no way to do it for one.
Maybe a drip. Looks like that some of the paint is dripping or something.
Yeah, and then you let that also just become part of it. And, the other thing I think is kind of fascinating, I don't know, I'd have to ask you, but, like with a painting, I know when I'm done with it or sort of have a struggle of when I'm done with it, but I'm the one that decides, I'm the only one that really knows when to stop. And sometimes I will stop at a point where I know everyone's happy with the result. And sometimes I'll really spend extra time and fine tune it, knowing that nobody else is going to appreciate those little fine things that I did in the painting as well. Is that true in magic?
No, there is. The routine is never finished. In other words, when you've finished a painting mm-hmm. and you've sold it, it's on a wall. You can't go back to someone's home and say, if I did this, to it.
It's a horrible feeling. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Whereas, as a magician, we are always working on a routine. Yes, to be perfect, the audience really loves it. I mean, Matt King has got a beautiful act. He's honed mm-hmm. it to perfection by our standard of way of thinking. But to this day, I'm confident that there are still things in which he is thinking about, should I put my right foot and turn this way this time? Are there little nuances or things that would improve it yet? What can I do to make something?
Magicians have a lot of pressure, man. I didn't realize it, but I guess that's really true.
Sure.
Because anything would be a tell, a giveaway.
And when you put things in a book, a lot of magicians who are lecturing or they write a book and teach a trick, as soon as the book comes out, when they go around and lecture, say, since then I've come up with a different variation on this about how it can be done even better than what I printed and selling it.
Right.
So it's always, you're always fine tuning and working on that. And so that's the difference, I think, with performance art as opposed to art that's
right. Once you're done, you're done.
Once you're done,
it's not a living a living entity, because as a magician, you're going to go out and you're going to perform again for another audience with a different flavor, different lighting. I mean, I imagine you're in all sorts of circumstances.
Oh my gosh!
I want to ask you a question because I'm really curious, and I've always wanted to ask magicians this. From the time I was a kid, I was been under the impression, just like most people falsely have been under the impression, that art's worth more when you die. That's not true. Shh. But in magician, there seems to be an unwritten code that you don't show people how you do it. Mm-hmm. And, I've seen a couple shows or magicians that just come out, and I don't know if they're just anxious for celebrity, but it seems like they threw that code of honor away. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that a real thing, or is it?
It is a real thing, and in fact, that when you become a member of the Society of American Magicians, on your card that you have, there's a thing in which you would sign that says, "I promise to keep the code and everything," which is nice. Also, when somebody says, "Well, how'd you do that?" Well, I can't tell you, and you have a couple of little funny lines you say, but if they keep pressing you, say, "Well, look, I can show you the card. I've actually already signed this. I can't tell you, because I belong to the union or whatever it's going
to
be."
I can't tell because I have to kill you.
I will say that magicians are the worst people to keep secrets among themselves. It's like, I can hardly wait to show you. you know, look at how clever this is, you know.
Right.
And that, because when you go to a dealer's room or to a magic shop, that's what they're selling. You know, you learn the secret a little bit, and they're trying to sell that secret then also. Or perhaps they may be wanting to sell it in their lecture or their books or whatever else. And so we do share with magicians. Now, when it comes to non-magicians, that we are very secretive from the standpoint of not wanting to go out and share that.
Absolutely.
With rare exception, of course, there was the mass magician, Valentino, who was the one who had gone out and been on Fox television.
Oh, yeah.
And that, yeah. But he was trying to defend his decision to do that is that if I don't do it, someone else is going to do it. That's kind of a stupid thing. It's we can have a whole discussion
that
about
dumb.
That.
But I would just say, listen, if you're going to die anyway, so I'm just going to go ahead and kill you.
Myself.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to die anyways. Yeah. Might as well be me killing you.
Yeah. But really, he was thinking, well, I'm going to be teaching some things that are no longer being used by magicians. These are concepts. These are tricks. You know, things that have been performed back in the 1800s or the early 1900s that are really kind of classic effects that I'm showing you. However, that the methods that he was exposing are still methods that would be used in something else today that's just been updated, if you will. And so that's the bad part of this, in which that, and you can't put the genie back in the bottle. You can't, once you've said there's no Santa Claus, you can't go back and say, well, there's not, you know. And so he's
Michael
kind of
Jackson did the moonwalk, and once he did the moonwalk, there's lots of people that can do the moonwalk now and copy him, and there's going to be, you know, new dancers that come out with new moves or whatever.
Sure.
But, you know, once you dissect, but you only see it once for real. But it seems like, you know, a lot of magic, they kind of share that. You know, even as for as long as Chris and I have been friends, and I've done a couple different episodes for him, helped him with a couple of his tricks, as far as, you know, artwork that he might have needed to in order to do them. Even though we're buddies, and I mean close friends, he's never he's always had me sign a non-disclosure. I'm like, hey, dude, I get it. It's business.
Sure.
And, you know, it's good to hear that there's a card or a code of ethics, you know, because to me, you know, part of the fun is the magic of not knowing, and the magic of, you know, I don't know. But if I showed people how to draw a perfect circle, it's impressive to look at the circle. Wow, that thing's really perfect.
Yeah.
You know, if I pulled out a template and said, you know, a paper plate and said, okay, trace this, they're going to be like, what? Oh, that's not so impressive anymore.
That's a good point. Yep,
you know, but
right.
And I think going back to what we were saying earlier about how you constantly need to reinvent yourself and keep pushing in new directions, because I think as a creative artist, you see a trick, but you see a way to make it better or make it yours. Mm-hmm. I certainly didn't invent painting. You know, Leonardo DiCaprio did. I mean, Da Vinci. But I certainly see things that inspire me, and, you know, and art, I imagine the same thing as a magician. You see another magician, and you say, wow, he was really charismatic.
We stand on the shoulders of giants. I think all artists stand on the shoulders of giants, of those who have preceded us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same way, certainly, in magic, in which that someone will show you a trick. Well, here's my variation on that. You know, you start thinking about it, and then that will inspire someone else to have another variation and different kinds of things. Similarly, you know, I had heard before where that the early masters were having in their classes, when they would teach artists, to actually copy almost exactly whatever they had done, and little at a time. And I think even Salvador Dali's students were the same way. They were copying his until they developed their own style.
Absolutely.
But you have to learn how to do it right to begin with before you can have a variation, I guess, of that.
Yeah, you know? I think you're right. I mean, you know, it's funny. If you're a nurse, you stare at people's veins. If you're a person who makes shoes, you look at everybody's shoes. And, as a painter, I look at other people's art, and I started by copying. I mean, you know, we come into this world mimicking, you know, other people, and we take some of those things and that sort of becomes our own. So if I see an artist that, you know, painted really, I like the way he did an ocean or whatever, I'll still try and make it my own. But, you know, when you're learning, you know, you copy, you use someone else's art
style.
Not to necessarily make money, but, you know,
but
you take different things, and then you know take it a new place. I certainly am not the first person to paint in a martini, but I certainly took it to a new place.
Yeah.
And you know, my doctors say it's still okay. but I think that same idea can be applied to so many things. You know, take it to someplace new. They're still coming up with new drinks and new recipes,
of course,
you know,
and new
magic, new song. I mean,
that's the thing with the songs. You know, there are only a finite number of notes. But there are a million songs,
right,
you know, that are out there. And the same thing, that there are some basic effects, you know, like a levitation, suspension, mm-hmm, transformation, production, sure, vanish, you know. So they're all variations of the effect, if
sure
you will.
Yeah.
And likewise, there are only so many colors on the palette, you
right
know, but you can combine them for other hues and variations, of course,
yeah,
of that, to create something completely different.
Sure.
And it is uniquely yours, which is different from mine. I mean, if we're all looking at a rose in the class and we're uh-huh painting the rose, everyone will be completely different.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's like the both of us reading the same book, and we're each inventing, you know, the faces and the characters and that. And
that's why
know
I like movies. Also, when you talk about a movie, you know, we have different opinions about
yeah
what we just saw, the very same thing. I mean, it's mm-hmm like a, you know, a car wreck in which you have people telling different what
yeah
thing, opinions of what they just saw.
Yeah.
But like, you know, Murray and I were just talking about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Absolutely love that movie. Murray
right
said, once in a while about it. You
right
know? But it's interesting to have a discourse about that.
You know what? That's happened as me being in the audience of a magic show.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife and I and family went to go see a show, and somebody had done something where they had guessed a number. It was on a piece of paper that was mm-hmm came out later in the show, and we all had a conversation about how we think it might have been done.
Yeah.
And you know, different
yeah
versions, some sounded better than others, but it was a pretty fun conversation going, gosh, you know, did you see that? How do you think he did it? I don't know. How,
sure,
how do you think he did it? And you know, we try and people don't like things that are questions that are unanswered.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it feels better to be at ease and know, oh, okay, well, you know, he did this
but
or that.
But it's a good experience, certainly, because
yeah
you've experienced art, and it gives you an opportunity to come closer together through your divergence of opinions.
Sure.
And you're talking about that. For an example, going specifically, you're talking about magic, I'm talking about
yeah
painting.
Right.
Because I, you know, my wife and I talked about this several times, about when you're going to a gallery and you're looking at something, it's like, well, and you're staring, you know, looking at what was the artist thinking? You know, well, and
sure
he might have been, you know, in this place in his life, or he might be thinking about this or something.
Certainly.
And you know, my wife was saying, I just think he liked the color red, you
right
know. It could be just as simple as that, you know.
Yeah, and sometimes it is as simple as that. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. You know what I have learned about art through travel, and I'm sure as a magician this might be very relatable, but it crosses all language barriers. I would imagine
definitely
myself, if I had taken some of my paintings to Japan, where no one had, I could not explain what the painting was about.
Right.
But they looked at it, they got it, it moved them somehow, or they connected to it somehow. I imagine you could go to any, that's going to be the beautiful thing about being a magician.
Mm-hmm.
You could literally go to any country in the world, you know, and even if you were a mime
mm-hmm
and doing, performing a trick for a kid who sees something and then he doesn't.
Exactly.
I mean, you just, and now you're friends. I mean,
well,
it's, oh.
Yeah,
yeah, cool.
And particularly if you have a silent actor just done to music like that, you can work internationally. And Marvin Roy, Mr. Electric, was the one who had inspired Murray. And Murray is, you know, taken his words to heart and has created the CD act that he traveled with
mm-hmm
and other kinds of things, that once you do have a silent act, that you can go anywhere, because you're right, that transcends language, that
right
you don't have to explain in whatever the language is.
Right.
And if you have some emotion that's involved with that also, you know, where that, oh, you know, through the expression on your face, oh, you know, I had lost love or something, you know,
mm-hmm,
that they can understand that then too, and have that arc so that there is something that's a story being told within the context
mm-hmm
of either the music, the mime, or whatever that you're saying, you know, then again, that it doesn't matter. Whereas if you're trying to talk, they don't understand, or you have to have a translator.
Right.
So, yeah, if you're working on an act that you want to take internationally, you need to think about
mm-hmm
where it will play, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
art, also paintings, is something that people can, in their own minds and whatever language
mm-hmm
they're speaking, interpret that however that their experience and their environment has brought them up, because it can be completely different from what you're intending.
Oh, here. Oh, that happens all the time. And mm-hmm I'll tell people, listen, just like in music, I said, there's a lot of great music out there. And when you go out and you actually purchase the music, it's because you've connected with it. It somehow mirrors your life or whatever. And so you go out and purchase it. Then you get the lyrics home and you go, oh my gosh, I was totally had the wrong lyrics. I like my version better. Same thing happens with art.
Sure.
In fact, I just did a post today on a piece of art, and I said, listen, all I'm doing is I'm creating a stage. It's not what I tell you the painting's about.
Mm-hmm.
Really, what I try and do is get you to take it to somewhere magical in your mind.
Yeah.
And that makes it so much more fun. It's much more engaging then, I think,
mm-hmm
as well. And, yeah.
Have you drawn some painting? I'm going to wrap up here in a moment,
mm-hmm,
but I wanted to get also just to some, aside from some art that you have drawn privately for someone's collection or whatever, has there been something that you have sold that has a picture of a magician? And I'm saying this because I was, you knew who Al Hirschfeld was, and I was trying to line up a chat with him. Now, this is before I did podcasts, but I was going to be doing an article on him for Magic Magazine. And I'd spoken with his agent, and we were supposed to have had this phone conversation because I knew that he had drawn a picture of David Copperfield and even Houdini. I mean, he went back, you know, and there were a couple other magicians he'd done as well, and I wanted to talk with him just about that and then write this article. He was expecting my phone call, and I was expecting his, and then about an hour later, I called, and I said, I didn't hear from you. And they said, well, we didn't hear from you. And
call phone tag, buddy.
He died 10 days later. It's like, oh, my gosh, you know, talking about lost opportunities, you know, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But my point was that, or my question, it was a long way around this martini glass, is to go to having, you know, what people, what magicians have you ever drawn in your paintings?
Well, I have, there was a couple that I did. There's, of course, the drawing that I did with, I called it Magic and Mayhem, where there's actually a magician, you know,
on
performing.
Stage. Yeah.
And, you know, I turn all kinds of people into olives. Unfortunately, you know, Murray's an olive now.
Yes.
But I did one for the late Hugh Hefner and Michael Jordan and, oh gosh, all kinds of people. The late Carol Shelby, where they've turned them into olives. I haven't had that many magicians. I've done more things for them or for their shows, more so than anything else.
For the public.
More so than the public. But
okay.
It'd be fun to design a deck of cards or something. That would be cool. You know?
Would that be cool?
Yeah.
You know, that there was a fallout, and I can't remember who it was, but had created that where that it's, it is a, there are some paintings, they're animated, or just cartoons of caricatures of the different magician, but they didn't have a face. It was just an oval.
I mean,
no eyes, nose, or anything, you know.
Right.
But also, you can tell, like, Piff the Magic Dragon, you know, like in town, for an example.
Yeah,
you know,
I met him in an airport here when I was flying out somewhere. Him
that's
and
funny.
Penn and Teller were together.
They're good friends.
Yeah.
And Penn and Teller, again, were on the cards. Anyhow, that there was a card like that, a deck of cards. But if you had something like that, you know, I think that'd be interesting to have a deck of cards that it would certainly be interesting, you know, with olives. But how would you do it? I mean, Murray was obvious, you know, with the spiked hair and the glasses.
Oh, sure.
Know.
Well, you know, a lot of times that's how I'll have to identify someone is either by what they're wearing. So, for example, if I was going to paint you as an olive, I would obviously do it with the beard.
Yeah.
I'm probably holding a microphone. I'd have your favorite watch on, you know, those high heels you have on right now. Just kidding.
I just love them,
But I'll try and find other ways of doing that. Also, because most of my olives don't have faces on them at all, 99.9% of them. And I'll do things using body language. And so if I want to show an olive that's very proud, I'll prop his chest out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And if I want to make a strawberry more sexy, I'll give baby some back, you know, or something. Change the shape a little bit. But not so many yet.
All right. Well, listen, I want to wrap up. I appreciate your time. This has been just nothing short of marvelous. And
thank you.
Pleasure, G, getting a chance to.
Oh, Scott, it's a fun conversation. Really interesting. One other thing I wanted to tell you that's kind of crazy. Yeah, I mentioned earlier that I love to gamble.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, the worst thing you can ever tell somebody in a casino is that I'm here with a magician. Because Chris Angel was never allowed to go gamble with me because of their fear of how well they are. With how well they hold cards. Sure. You know, it might be true. I mean, I've seen some close-up magic where, you know, people do things with cards. I'm like, man, I could totally be getting ripped off right now, you know. But, it's all part of my Goddard's Crazy Life, actually. Yeah. So that's my Instagram, by the way. Goddard's Crazy Life.
Yeah.
It's true.
Well, I have been following you on Instagram as well because I knew that you'd just gone to Chicago and you were.
Yeah.
It looked like that you and Leanne had gone on a shopping trip at the Mall of America.
Oh, God. I don't know why they keep sending me to places, art galleries that are next to malls. It's terrible.
That's where they all are, I guess. Well, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So my question. Before we get into that, one last thing, and that has to do with your charity. I understand that your daughter Paige had passed from cancer.
Yeah, she had medulloblastoma. I got involved with St. Jude. I've been actually involved in them for quite some time. And every art show I do, we raise money for charity and give it to St. Jude. Also, there's some other charities worth mentioning too. The SPCA, which does no-kill dog shelters and things. Now, as I learn more about the military, we're involved with Wounded Warriors, and you know, basically, if I'm going to do a show in a town, you know, it's a It's an obligation, because I feel like, listen, if I'm going to sell 50 paintings, you know, I might as well sell one that does something good for somebody else, and that, you know, that makes the world go around. So CF, MS, my goodness, Crohn's disease. We help a lot of different causes, but St. Jude would be primo. Yeah. They'd be the one, you know.
My wife had passed just last year. We were married for 43 years, and she had a glioblastoma.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Grade 4, and so they told her when she got it that, you know, you got 13 months, and she had, last for 12, and we were together for 43 years. So it's difficult.
And illness doesn't discriminate. It happens to anybody, anytime. And you know, fortunately, you know, we're able to take another breath. And you know, to be honest with you, it really that changed my life too, in more ways than one. And it's not something I would wish on my worst enemy.
Exactly.
But I will tell you, you know, we just get to borrow people for a short time. And that's the reason that, you know, I mean, I'll never heal from losing my daughter or my father, you know. And, you know, and life can be pretty scary. But, man, you know, that's why you got to make it count while you're here. I think my daughter would be so happy with all the children that we have helped and maybe given a second chance. And, you know, I want my little girls to do whatever they want to in life. And, you know, if they decide to do art, that would be great. You know, if not, man, I just want to give them a jump start on life and realize that, you know, even with my daughter, I mean, it could have been way worse. She could have been kidnapped. She could have been hit by a drunk driver. You know, all
could
kinds of bad things. Yeah, much more tragic. In my circumstance, I got a chance to say goodbye. But, you know, there's not a day I don't. It keeps you humble and keeps you grounded. And unfortunately, we're all getting older, and we all have we don't know what the big plan is for us as far as when we're going upstairs or downstairs, you know, depending on how you've lived and all that stuff.
It goes back to what you were saying, you know, to kind of live in the moment and enjoy wherever you are at this point in your life.
I'll share something else with you that's really kind of neat. When you give like that, mm-hmm. it's amazing the opportunities that open up for you as
back.
Well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I have done several things here with the local television station, Fox. And, you know, anytime I'm doing a charity, you know, they love to be part of it too, you know. And I include it in every show that I do. And it's great when you can give back like that. And I'll tell you, a lot of times they're more interested in what you have to say if they know you're just not all about yourself and, you know, and that's the end of you. That's the beginning. You know, everyone who's trying to get more notoriety or whatever, like to have, you know, more fame or do more TV shows or whatever, you know, everything's got its dark side too, let me tell you. But, you know, if people see that you're doing some good, mm-hmm. and like that, I mean, I think it humanizes you, and they see you as someone who might be a lot more approachable. Mm-hmm. And, man, and we all have a little bit of magic in us that makes us unique, you know, and sharing it and doing something good with it is probably the best thing I do with my art, man. I mean, that's, you know, I have a lot to be thankful for, more than what I need. Yeah. But, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, is the world a better place because I was here or not? And I want to be able to say it was. And if I tell people all the time, listen, I have paintings that sell for $500,000 for one painting. The goal this year is to sell one painting for $1 million. And it might happen this year. I've got some things lined up that might make it happen. But, you know, the art critics still give me a hard time. They say, well, we see your stuff in Bed Bath & Beyond. We see it in Walmart. And you're a sellout. No, you know what? I'm not a sellout. What I do is I just want to be able to share what I love so much with other people. And I don't care if I make a nickel, a penny, or $100,000. Makes no difference. I've had money. I've lost money. I don't care. Yeah. At this point, I love putting a smile on someone's face when they see my art and they go, oh my gosh, that's fun. Or oh my gosh, that reminds me of somebody. And I imagine magic, you know, what a great way to make friends. What a great way to put a smile on
people's
someone's face.
Sure.
You can't buy smiles, man. You cannot.
That's
and
true.
They are priceless. The older we get, the more I realize it. At least I have most of my teeth now, too, for now.
That's true. Well, as we wrap up now, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. And I always like to ask my guests as I conclude, what is it that's your magic word? And not necessarily a word, but I mean like a phrase. What is your philosophy of life? I mean, you almost just summed it up over there, but a lot of things we've talked about. You know, what when you wake up in the morning that gives you desire to continue that day? What do you love?
I would say I'm constantly trying to slow down and be in the moment. Mm-hmm. I think no matter how well you try and plan your day, your hour, things go sour, things go left, things go right. And I think you need to remind yourself every day of the big picture. What are you doing that makes you happy? And forgetting what your expectations are. I guess, you know, feed your faith that everything's going to be okay. Feed your faith and your fears will starve.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a way of, well, I really like that. I heard anybody, say that exactly. Well, gee, this has been, again, fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so very much for being here.
Oh, thank you, Scott.
Now
it's been a pleasure. So, yeah, check me out on my Facebook. It's Official Goddard with no space in between. And my Instagram is Goddard's Crazy Life. And hope to catch some of you aspiring magicians and you professionals and you beginners out there.
Yep.
You know, look me up. I'll come to your show. Maybe you'll come to mine. But great getting to talk with all of you. Thank you.
And where is, what's your website?
So they can go take a look. MichaelGoddard.com, and my last name is spelled with one D in the middle, G-O-D-A-R-D, MichaelGoddard.com.
And they can see your studio here in Vegas. It's in Caesars, or where are you?
We have one at the Rio here, and I'm going to be doing, I got a couple great opportunities coming up. We have, going to be shooting an episode of Bar Rescue, and I don't know, you catch me on the History Channel, some other fun things I've done, but website's the best way.
Yeah.
And if you text me or message me through my Facebook or Instagram, you get me directly. We don't have any staff do it, and it's all either myself or my boss. I mean, my beautiful wife.
Yeah. And Nadicea, she just brought me a blizzard from the Dairy Queen as we were sitting here, too. So thank you.
There it is melting, buddy. That's in trouble. It's 107 outside.
That's right. Yeah. Well, it's finally cooled off over here.
And I would say, too, man, anyone who has a dream, I'm telling you, dreams come true. And it's a matter of how hard you're willing to work at it and how much you want it and have thick skin, but never give up. You know, the moment you take your story and you try and sell it and they turn it into a movie and nothing matches anymore. Like, you got to follow your, I mean, you know, if someone told me I'd be painting olives for a living again,
yeah.
But here I sit.
Here we sit. Thanks again. So with the Magic Word Podcast, that was G, Michael Goddard. This is Scotty out. Wow. Thank you very much, G. I appreciate the time you gave me and your hospitality for you and your wife of letting me into your home and to have a chance to chat with you about these really interesting subjects. And I certainly learned a lot, got a lot out of this, and look forward to our future conversations and opportunities to get together. That was just fantastic. Well, listen, I just want to thank all the listeners also for tuning into this episode. And I know that you had to get a lot out of this. It's not one of those things where I think you might have or I hope that you do. I know for sure that you did get a lot out of this conversation with Michael Goddard. So please keep listening. And if you have not yet subscribed to our pod letter, please do go to themagicwordpodcast.com. And there you should hopefully see a little pop-up that will come up on your screen. And you can sign up for our weekly pod letter, which is free. If not, then you can just click on one of the tabs over to the side, which says subscribe to the Magic Word Podcast. And you can get on the pod letter that way. So this way you are up to date on what's going to be happening whenever we happen to have some sort of a little contest from time to time. Plus, you get to know who's going to be coming up from week to week, plus a suggestion from the archives. During the past few weeks, I've had some suggestions there for some older episodes that have been Christmas-related or holiday-related episodes. There have been the Christmas Carol, The Night Before Christmas, as well as The Grinch Who Stole Christmas. So we've had just some great podcasts in the past that I think it's worth re-listening at this time of the year. And then also, since it's just a few days before Christmas and time to maybe make those last-minute selections, let me suggest, if you will, please, I'm an affiliate of the Amazon.com program, which means that if you will just go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there on the bottom of every page, you'll see a link or a banner, actually, that you can go to Amazon, open up your account, order whatever you want, and it's a few cents from each one of your purchases will go to help support this podcast. So if you can help us that way, that'll be great. Another way that you can help us, if you listen on iTunes, just go to the iTunes store and give us a 5-star review and a comment. That will always be appreciated. And of course, you can always like us on Facebook and on Twitter and Instagram, all the usual social kinds of ways of keeping in touch with us there all the time. So we're going to be coming up on the holiday here, and so I hope that you guys really do have a wonderful, most joyful time with your family and friends, and it's the most blessed and sacred time for all of you, and a time, again, for us to give thanks. We just came out of Thanksgiving and a time to give thanks, and this is the season to continue to give thanks, I believe, for all of the gifts and joys that we have, and I am thankful for each and every one of you for tuning in and listening each week, and this really warms my heart as well. So I want to thank you all again very much for listening. And until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to feed your faith, and your fears will starve. This is Scotty out.